Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Tonight on The Readout.
I'm proud to endorse and encourage you to get this Bible. We must make America pray again.
I'm wondering what one or two of your most favored Bible verses are.
Well,
and why.
I wouldn't want to get into it because to me that's very personal. The Bible means a lot to me, but I don't want to get into specifics.
Even to cite a verse that you like?
No, I don't want to do that.
Are you an Old Testament guy or a New Testament guy?
Probably equal.
This man can't name even one Bible verse, but eagerly used the Bible as a prop in Lafayette Square. And now, Donald Trump is hawking special MAGA Bibles at $60 a pop. Also tonight, the great Rachel Maddow joins me in just a few minutes about today's arguments over the mifepristone abortion pill. And right-wingers always tell us that it's too soon to talk about guns after deadly shootings. But apparently, it's not too soon to make unhinged accusations following the devastating bridge collapse in Baltimore. Good evening, everyone. We begin tonight with the enduring, endlessly controversial, and ugly political debate over abortion. Now, from the olden days when I grew up in the 1980s, this is how abortion was experienced by women in much of the United States.
A woman accused of setting fires at three abortion clinics is under arrest tonight in New Jersey.
Real feminists don't kill babies!
Stand up.
There were similar demonstrations in other parts of the country. In Albany and Syracuse, New York, 150 arrests. In Philadelphia, the demonstrators went limp and police carted them off on stretchers. 40 demonstrators in Dayton, Ohio, were charged with trespassing, disorderly conduct, and resisting arrest.
A nationwide reign of terror against abortion providers kicked off. Women forced to enter abortion clinics behind barricades and a police presence under a huddle of escorts. Guerrilla warfare tactics were particularly used against these clinics. And those that worked in them were also the targets of extreme violence, including arson, bombings, murders, and acid attacks. This was life in the 1980s in America, seeing anti-abortion terrorists bombing and torching clinics throughout the country. Here you're seeing the destruction of a clinic in Pensacola, Florida, using pipe bombs. It was one of three clinics bombed by four people early Christmas morning in 1984. This Pensacola multi-arson attack wasn't unique for the area. In fact, Pensacola, Florida became a hotbed of anti-abortion hysteria in that decade. The hysteria only worsened and got more organized when conservative groups like Operation Rescue made going to an abortion clinic as a patient or working at one particularly dangerous. Here you see Operation Rescue protesters in Minneapolis, where 153 people were arrested and carted out of a building where they blocked a hallway leading to an abortion clinic inside. According to Slate, Operation Rescue would organize abortion clinic hits, as clinic defenders called them, in which hundreds of members would mob a single abortion clinic. Over the course of the 1980s, the U.S. lost nearly 20% of abortion providers. The Slate article reports the observations of longtime Women's Choice Clinic director Lindsay Comey, who said the attacks were spearheaded by, quote, very angry men. Comey added, quote, this was a fight about male superiority. And the worst of the right wing came out to join that struggle. Not only were they women haters, but they were queer haters. It was a Christian militia. The 1990s and 2000s weren't much better, with the first abortion doctor killed. Others would follow, including one doctor who was killed as he stood in the foyer of his church.
Dr. David Gunn was shot after getting out of his car as he came to work at a Pensacola abortion clinic. A dozen anti-abortion protesters from an Assembly of God church were outside. One of them was armed. When Dr. Gunn arrived,
a guy took after the doctor and shot him point blank in the back, and then he surrendered to the cops.
Dr. John Baird Britton and the man accompanying him, they were shot to death outside a Pensacola, Florida abortion clinic. The escort's wife was also wounded in the hail of shotgun blasts.
Dr. George Tiller was killed in his church.
It was a violent and cruel era. Women and abortion clinic workers basically lived through three decades of terrorism around abortion. But something else had also happened in the 1980s in France, where a new drug, mifepristone, commonly called RU486, was developed to be taken for medication abortion care. The arrival of a drug that would allow women to skip the miserable and even terrifying process of facing down anti-abortion zealots at clinics was a game changer. The drug was approved for use in France in 1988, but American women had to wait much longer.
There is a pill made in France that induces abortion, but it is not sold in the United States and may never be.
The reason? Anti-abortion groups, which promise an economic war against any firm which even tries to bring in RU486.
You are going to see literally millions of people across the United States rise in outrage over this. That company will be boycotted.
But RU486 continued to be used in parts of Europe and China. And by the year 2000, American women finally got access to the drug. Today, more than 60% of abortions in the U.S. are done using mifepristone medication. Medication abortion literally saved women from harassment and from terrorism. And from needing police escorts to literally lift them over anti-abortion protesters blocking the entrances of clinics like this woman in 1988. But the religious far right has not given up their fight to close off this and every other avenue to women's bodily autonomy. First step was overturning Roe v. Wade. Check. Samuel Alito took care of that. The vociferous opponent of reproductive freedom, whose slow-burning hostility to constitutional abortion rights, burned bright after finally overturning Roe. So much so that he literally gloated and joked about unleashing women's suffering during his Look What I Did world tour. Next, a far-right judge in Texas took up the baton. That would be Judge James Ho of the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, who served on the three-judge panel last summer that ruled to restrict access to mifepristone. And here's something interesting about Clarence Thomasy, I should say, about him. Per The Guardian, his wife, Allison, is a powerhouse federal appellate lawyer who has argued in front of the Supreme Court and has deep connections to the conservative legal movement that has led to the attack on the right to abortion in the U.S. Judge Ho also once clerked for, drumroll, Clarence Thomas. I know, we live in the worst simulation ever. Which brings us back to the conservative majority Supreme Court, which held oral arguments today on whether to overturn the FDA's approval of mifepristone more than 20 years ago. Today's arguments came down to three questions. Question number one, how in the world do these people have standing?
Rolling back FDA's changes would unnecessarily restrict access to mifepristone with no safety justification. Some women could be forced to undergo more invasive surgical abortions. Others might not be able to access the drug at all. And all of this would happen at the request of plaintiffs who have no certain injury of their own.
Number two, how is this small group of doctors able to make a decision not just for their own patients, but for every woman in America?
They're saying because we object to having to be forced to participate in this procedure, we're seeking an order preventing anyone from having access to these drugs at all. And I guess I'm just trying to understand how they could possibly be entitled to that, given the injury that they have alleged.
There's a profound mismatch here between the claimed injury and the remedy they were seeking.
And number three, should some doctors' individual religious objection to abortion be allowed to override decades of the FDA's scientific judgment over the safety of this medication?
Respondents don't identify any evidence that the agency overlooked. They just disagree with the agency's analysis of the data before it. But that doesn't provide a license to authorize judicial second-guessing of the agency's expert judgments.
Joining me now is my dear friend and colleague, Rachel Maddow, the host, as you know, of The Rachel Maddow Show. Rachel, it is always good to see you. And that was my take. You know, I am an 80s baby. But you know, I was young in the 80s. And so I just remember the abortion debate as like terrorism. And now this being freedom for a lot of women. That was my take. What is yours on what we saw today?
Yeah, Joy, I think that was a really important and sobering setup. Actually, some of those images that you showed are images that I've never seen before. That image of that woman, the woman being lifted over the line of abortion protesters by police. I mean, I've never seen that image before. That was incredible. But I mean, there's the technical arguments here, and there's, you know, the FDA drug approval process, not just for this drug, but for every drug, which this ruling at the district court level in Texas and the Fifth Circuit would put at risk. It wouldn't just potentially, if they got their way, it wouldn't just potentially challenge the approval of mifepristone. It would challenge the approval of thousands of drugs. So there's the sort of technical side of this. But then there's, you know, what you point out, which is the real lived experience of American women who need abortion care, who need to get abortions, and having the option of getting a medication abortion. It's not appropriate for everybody and in every circumstance, but it is for a lot of abortions, actually now for a majority of abortions. And what they're trying to do is take it away, not just in the states where they've already banned abortion. They're trying to take it away nationwide. They want a nationwide ban. This means, you know, California, Illinois, New York, Massachusetts, everywhere. And the science and the reasoning in these lower court arguments that they're considering is so out there and so beyond the pale. It is a little bit frightening. It is a little bit sort of shaking me up a bit that the Supreme Court is even hearing this at all.
Yeah, and the thing is that you saw kind of a peek into sort of what their thinking is. I mean, Samuel Alito, I presume, is going to vote to end women's access to mifepristone because he sees himself as sort of defender of the faith, at least per the little tour that he made after getting rid of Roe v. Wade. But you sort of got a peek into their arguments. Argument number one, well, the Comstock Act is at root here. That hasn't been for over 100 years. No one has enforced the Comstock Act, but essentially saying you're sending a dangerous drug through the mail seems to be sort of one way to do it. And the other being that these doctors have this deep religious conviction against abortion, which when I was in the 1980s, they used to call RU486 human pesticide. That's how they used to refer to it, the religious right.
Wow.
And so they
wow.
have a deep-seated, but they could just not prescribe it for their pay. They could just not prescribe it. But I think it's a religious liberty argument I think Alito is going for.
Yeah, and that conscience objection that you're talking about, Joy, that was a main point of discussion today at the oral arguments. And the fact remains that if there's a healthcare provider who says they have a conscience-based objection to providing abortion care, they don't have to. That's already in federal law that exists. You don't have to be the doctor who does it. There can be some other doctor in the hospital who provides that care. That exists. That's not in question. That's not being challenged anywhere in the country. And essentially, the plaintiffs here are asking the Supreme Court justices to say that's not enough. We just don't want anybody to be able to get this care anywhere in any of the 50 states in the country. And the standing issue, I think, is the most likely grounds on which it will be decided, because that's the easiest way out for the Supreme Court to be able to say, hey, there's nobody being harmed here. Nobody's making you provide abortion care that you don't want to provide. And so it's not going to happen. But the Comstock Act thing that you're referencing, I think, is a tell. Because the Comstock Act, as you're correct to note, hasn't been enforced in over a century. It's a law from 1873. It would be an insane way for them to try to ban abortion nationwide. But clearly, Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas have their eyes on it, kept bringing it up over and over again today as if this is like a commonly used, you know, current statute. And it shows you that they are looking for a way to ban abortion nationwide. You've got Donald Trump campaigning for the Republican presidential nomination, saying he wants a national ban. You've got the Republicans in Congress, vast majority of whom have signed on to legislation, signed on to a resolution that would imply a national ban. You've got the conservatives on the court saying they want a national ban. I mean, this is what Republicans in power will do and what portions of the Supreme Court are trying to get away with. Even right now.
Yeah. And then there's in addition to all of that and the sort of, I mean, and I think for a lot of women, the left went to sleep for 50 years after Roe v. Wade passed, right? They just said, we got this right. It's good. And didn't see it coming. And I think I was one of the people who was like constantly being like, guys, they really mean it when they want to ban it. They're going to overturn Roe. People didn't see it coming. But be that as it may, the people doing it is an issue too. There is the weird Clarence Thomasiness of it. There's not just Josh Hawley's wife being the Hawley who you all saw on TV. She also was a part of the group that, you know, sort of pushed to get rid of Roe. But then you've also got Judge James Ho, The legal group behind this case, it's called the Alliance Defending Freedom. They made at least six payments from 2018 to 2022 to his wife, the judge's wife, Allison. She's a powerhouse federal appellate lawyer who's argued in front of the Supreme Court and has deep connections to the conservative legal movement that's led the attack on the right to choose. It's sort of like these are the Serena Joys, you know, these women who are kind of leading the fight to get rid of the right to choose for the rest of the women in America.
I mean, Ms. Hawley is an experienced litigator. She's been at big, you know, important law firms. She's good at what she does. I think she made the best case that could be made today before the Supreme Court. I will say that she doesn't have an easy hand to play even before these justices. I mean, Joy, part of the drama here is that the Supreme Court took this, even though the initial case, the federal district court case in Texas that brought this, it cited, in talking about mifepristone, two studies about the supposed unsafeness of mifepristone, two studies that have been retracted since they were published. It cited one doctor who is not a doctor, whose highest degree is a master's in theological studies. It cited another source for their, like, unsafeness of mifepristone, which has been prescribed thousands and thousands and thousands of times over decades in this country and is a perfectly safe drug. Another source for that mifepristone claims that they upheld at the Fifth Circuit, that they counted on and cited at the Fifth Circuit, was from a website that says that Barack Obama hypnotized the American people using verbal tricks. And the big O in his campaign logo was a crystal ball mesmerizing us. And that is the source of the citations that the Fifth Circuit used for saying that mifepristone shouldn't be taken because their very serious scientific information disproves it. I mean, for something that clownish.
Yeah.
To get up through the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals and then get up to the Supreme Court is crazy town. And it just shows you how hard they are working, how they're working, you know, triple time to find any way to get a nationwide abortion ban. That's what they want. And they're going to try to get it by hook or by crook.
When people tell you what they want to do, maybe believe them, because they've been saying this for 50 years that they want to get rid of women's access to abortion. Before I let you go and release this hostage situation that I always implement whenever you're on the show with me. So something happened. Another thing happened that is not about the abortion situation. Our chairman of the NBC Universal News Group, Cesar Conde, who we both know very well, he sent a memo that we all got as employees here, rescinding the hiring of Ronna Romney McDaniel. And I know I felt very strongly about it. I know you felt very strongly about it. I think everyone from 4 o'clock on, from Nicole all the way to midnight, we all felt very strongly and said so on our respective shows yesterday. And I just have to say, when somebody does the right thing, I feel like it should be acknowledged as publicly as we acknowledged our outrage. And so I know how I feel about it. I am grateful to Cesar for actually making the right decision. I think it was the right decision, but I want to get your take as well.
Oh, well, thank you for asking me about it. I still feel like a little, it always feels wrong to talk about things, you know, in the company.
Agreed.
As if it's news. And I, you know, it's just this, it's not the way either you or I are wired, I know. But I will just say that journalists are a fractious bunch. And in our big company with all sorts of different journalistic entities, you have all sorts of different people working in this business, doing all sorts of different kinds of work. And to see the essentially unanimous feeling among all the journalists in this building
and all the
sort of senior staff and all the producers and everybody in this building about this was one thing. But then to see the executives and the leadership hear that and respond to it and be willing to change course based on it, based on their respect for us and hearing what we argued, I have deep respect for that. I do. I mean what I said on the air last night on my show, that I think that acknowledging that you might have gotten something wrong is a real sign of strength, a real show of strength. And I think it's a show of strength. And I think it's a show of respect for the people who work at this company and who make us who we are, that leadership was willing to change on this. And I'm grateful to them. You know, it's not about hiring a Republican. It's not even about hiring somebody who has Trump ties. This was a really specific case because of Ms. McDaniel's and her involvement in the election interference stuff. And I'm grateful that our leadership was willing to do the, I think, the bold, strong, resilient thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be using her name because she's a witness in the Michigan electors case. I mean, it's like it's less awkward to have to say, and by the way, this person works for NBC News. Right. We're glad we don't have to do that. Rachel Maddow, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you very much. I now release you to your evening.
Thank you, Joy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. OK, and because we cannot get enough Rachel, of course, there is more. There is more Rachel Maddow. On Saturday, April 6th, Rachel and I will be at the legendary Apollo Theater in Harlem for a conversation about my book, Medgar and Merle, The Love Story That Awakened America. It's going to be exciting. I cannot wait. Go to MSNBC.com/Medgar and Merle for tickets. All right. We'll be right back.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
The recovery effort continues in Baltimore tonight after the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed overnight when a shipping vessel headed for Sri Lanka lost power and hit a pillar. Earlier today, Maryland Governor Wes Moore credited the ship's crew for a Mayday call, that allowed local authorities to limit traffic.
To hear the words that the Key Bridge has collapsed, it's shocking and heartbreaking. Literally, by being able to stop cars from coming over the bridge, these people are heroes. They saved lives last night.
Governor Moore said the situation remains a search and rescue effort. At least six construction workers who'd been working on the bridge remain unaccounted for. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg reiterated President Biden's pledge that the federal government will do whatever it can to get the bridge reopened.
The path to normalcy will not be easy. It will not be quick. It will not be inexpensive. But we will rebuild together.
A preliminary investigation indicated the cause of the collapse was an accident with no signs of nefarious intent. But on the right, many of the usual no time for politics types spread conspiracy theories with right-wing talking points, like Fox host Maria Bartiromo and CPAC chairman Matt Schlapp.
The ship involved in the collapse of the bridge is 948 feet long, called the Dolly, a Singaporean-flagged container. But, of course, you've been talking a lot about the potential for wrongdoing or potential for foul play, given the wide-open border.
I'm one of these people that believes we've never fully come out of all the lockdowns and the COVID issues. I'm no expert on what's going on the seas, but all I would say is that if you talk to employers in America, they'll tell you that filling slots with employees who aren't drug-addled is a very huge problem.
Meanwhile, a Republican running for governor of Utah blamed the bridge collapse on, you will not guess, diversity. And governors who prioritize diversity over the well-being and security of citizens. I'm not making that up. Joining me now is Congressman Kwesi Nfumi, who represents Baltimore. I'm tempted to ask Maria Bartiromo, the border, the wide open border with Virginia. I mean, the commentary is so ridiculous. I'm going to hold off on letting you comment on that foolishness for a moment. Talk to me about the situation in terms of those who are still missing and those who might have been injured in this horrible accident.
Thank you very much. The situation is still search and rescue, although I think the divers are coming up out of the water now. It's getting dark here. And they've been going down many times a day. Sonar has located in an area, one or two vehicles. We still don't know who the occupants of those vehicles are or if there are occupants. And the families, as you might imagine, of these individuals, all six families are very, very much stressed tonight, not knowing any more than what we know as we talk about this through news outlets. This appears by all means to have been an accident. The FBI special agent in charge has been with us all day here. He's pretty much confirmed that several times, even though some people want to count everything as a conspiracy. President Biden reached out earlier. We had a great conversation with him, both myself and then also the two senators representing the area. The president has pledged, as he said, to move heaven and hell to get this taken care of. This is going to cost the port $2 million a day. It's probably going to take months to clear the debris because in order for the channel to open up, all that steel structure has to be removed from under the surface of the ocean. And God only knows it will take several years to reconstruct this bridge. But things are better in the sense that at least we know that this was not terrorist related. At least we know now that there are no other individuals other than the ones that have been designated as still missing. And we do know also that there is a great deal of comfort being given to the families at this time.
Congressman, I'm just hearing now from my producers that there is an update now to the situation. The search and rescue portion of the effort is now suspended. The six people who are missing are now presumed dead. I want to go ahead and get your commentary on that, sir.
Well, it's a grave tragedy. These persons were out on the bridge at 1:30 in the morning, filling potholes and doing work late at night. And as the governor mentioned earlier, if we did not get a Mayday signal from the boat to the Coast Guard so that the state police could close down both ends of the bridge, many more people would have died. So it is a real tragedy. It's something that none of us can anticipate or even imagine, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And if that search and rescue has been suspended or called off completely, it just gives all of us a solemn moment for pause.
Indeed.
For tragedy. Far too many tragedies, I might add, in America as we know it.
Indeed. And, you know, in addition to just the horror of what those six people and those also who were injured must have gone through, the kind of the obvious question, while Republicans want to talk about ridiculous things like trying to bring DEI and race into it. The regulation, though, when I saw this morning and saw the live stream that was up, I wonder about the federal regulation aspect of it. Republicans tend to hate regulation, but this seems like a textbook place where regulation is needed, right? Is that something that you discussed with Secretary Buttigieg or that you want to discuss with the administration? Because regulation is what keeps large ships from being in the vicinity of vulnerable infrastructure such that things like this could happen.
You're absolutely right, Joy. This whole notion is being revisited. Most people would say, technically, that there were plenty of regulations in place. These ships are brought down the bay with a, quote, pilot who has to go through 7 years of training before they can guide ships out by directing the captain or the navigator of the ship. And there were, at some point, tugboats moving the ship initially out of the harbor. But even Secretary Buttigieg will tell you that you can never have enough regulations when human life and property is at risk. And in this instance, where the vital lifeline, economic lifeline of an entire state is at risk.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And I think that's a message Republicans may not want to hear, but it is the right message. Deepest condolences to the families of those six now who are presumed dead, who are working on that vessel. And I thank you, Congressman Quayle and Fumé, for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thank you, Joy. And just shame on those people who want to make something out of this that isn't there. They have this boogeyman philosophy. And if it's black or brown, it's something that they've got a target on.
Yeah.
I just think that is just totally uncalled for at a time like this.
Well said. Thank you, sir. Much appreciated. And coming up, there's been a lot of doom and gloom on the left about the 2024 election. But new polls have some good news for Biden. That's next.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun.
the, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake, let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at King's Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. King's Island is now open weekends.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
After months of hearing nonstop about how Donald Trump is supposedly crushing President Biden in every poll, well, except the six polls that Biden was leading in last week, well, it's beginning to look like the tide is changing. New polling today from Bloomberg and Morning Consult shows the president gaining ground against Trump in 6 out of 7 key swing states. Biden now leads Trump by 1 point in Wisconsin. The two are tied in Pennsylvania and Michigan, and the gap is narrowing in Arizona, Nevada, and North Carolina. Now, it is important to know that most of these findings are within the margin of error. And of course, polls taken this far out should be taken with a giant grain of salt. However, it does give us a snapshot of where the race currently stands after the two candidates officially became presumptive nominees and after Biden's strong State of the Union address. It also sends some warning signs about the potential impact of a third party candidate. The poll shows that in all swing states combined, Trump leads Biden 47-43 in a head-to-head matchup. But add in independent candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. into the mix, and that lead widens, with Trump gaining 43%, Biden 38%, and Kennedy receiving 9%. It comes as today, Kennedy announced his running mate will be wealthy Silicon Valley attorney and entrepreneur Nicole Shanahan, who, like Kennedy, has never before run for elected office. Joining me now is Basil Smichel, Democratic strategist and director of the public policy program at Hunter College, and Susan Del Percio, Republican strategist and MSNBC political analyst. Strat versus strat. We love doing that. Ladies first. The whole people like bedwetting Democrats, it's what they do. I always thought it was a bit early to be doing that, but your take on these new polls.
No, it is. It was early because guess what? They were close in 2016. They were close in 2020. They're going to be close in 2024. If they are within the margin of error, it doesn't matter who's up 2 or down 3. It's close. Now, there was one thing I was taking away from the polls, and that was enthusiasm for Biden. And there is something to that. And we have been seeing it with younger people, people of color, just and generally his base. There's also another thing that Biden has to face is that Trump voters are with Trump.
No matter what.
They are voting for him because they want him. Mm-hmm. There's a significant amount of Biden voters who are voting for Biden because they hate Trump.
Right.
And those are the voters who you can't rely on to come out to vote unless you give them a reason. And that's why you hope to raise $155 million and have it in the bank this early.
They're on the way to doing it. I mean, the cash advantage, look, and having worked in campaigns a little bit, and you guys done it more than me, you need money. You need to run. I mean, apparently Trump had to cancel an event they wanted to do in Arizona because they don't have enough money. Whereas Biden is raising money hand over fist. They've got a huge fundraiser this Thursday with President Obama, President Clinton, all the celebrities that they can put across the street at Radio City Mute. Like, it's huge.
And I'm not going.
How are you not going?
I teach class. Students come first.
Students first.
But that's absolutely right. The cash advantage is incredibly important because we know that Donald Trump is raising cash to pay for his legal fees.
Yes.
Joe Biden uses it to actually go and talk to those voters. That is incredibly important. A lot of those skeptical voters, the State of the Union helped tremendously, I think, because it showed that he was willing to take it there, right? Yeah. For a long time, we said, I had my issues with this, but a lot of people said when they go low, we go high. And I'm like, I'm from the Bronx. I don't get that.
Well, we go to the Earth's core. When they go low, we go to the Earth's core.
You punch him, when you get confronted with a bully, you punch him in the nose.
Correct.
And that's what I think Joe Biden is absolutely starting
for
to do.
For the children. As Nancy Pelosi said, for the children.
Always with children. And look, I think my mentor used to tell me this all the time when, you know, voters may forgive a liar, but they will not forgive a hypocrite. And what the Biden administration is doing, particularly by having the cabinet members out there talking about what the administration has done, is call attention to the hypocrisy of not just the Republican Party, Donald Trump specifically.
Yeah.
We see that in the court cases. Dispense with the legalese, focus on the values. And that shift, I think, is what is represented in these polls.
And do the job. I mean, we just saw in, you know, this horrible bridge collapse, Republicans, where they go is it's the open border. I mean, the open border, what, with Virginia or with Delaware? Like, what are they talking about? And it's DEI, like trying to blame the blacks for a ship hitting a bridge, whereas Biden can send Pete Buttigieg down there, who's actually quite a good communicator, and say, look, we're actually going to fix this.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is that he kind of is using the Rose Garden strategy with his cabinet members instead of himself, which is really smart, so he can look like the government's running. And then he can use that early money, like he did with a $30 million advertising buy, to make a commercial kind of having a little fun out of himself, to make the healthcare, the Affordable Care Act commercial, which I thought was powerful. They're targeting it. So we don't usually see that coming out of a White House so early in a campaign, but we are. And it's important because it firms up those numbers that we really need to see for Joe Biden.
Yeah. And also, one part of the enthusiasm gap was obviously Gaza. The move. The shift on Gaza, I think, is important. And also finally naming the villain, which is Bibi Netanyahu. It seems like finally, right? It makes sense.
I got to tell you, going back to my students, a lot of them say that they weren't going to vote in this election. And I cannot in the classroom be a Democratic evangelist.
Sure.
I just can't. Big deal. I can't do that. But I can talk about the electoral ramifications of not voting.
Yeah.
Why that's important. And be able to say, look, if you don't want to vote for the individual, vote like this is a parliamentary election. Vote for the agenda.
Right.
One agenda is expanding your rights and allowing you to go out and actually vote. Another agenda is finding every way it can to restrict your vote.
And also banning abortion and making sure that every woman is essentially chattel.
Absolutely right. So I think, and this is going back to the earlier point, when they look at the choice that they have, maybe not a preference, but the choice that they have, they'll favor one agenda over another. And that's what we're going to get.
We shall see. Basil Smichel and Susan DiPersio, the law firm of Smichel and DiPersio. We love having them on. Thank you very much. Up next, the shocking details of the federal raid. Y'all know y'all talking about this. Of multiple homes owned by Sean Diddy Combs after a series of lawsuits accused him of serious sexual misconduct. Yikes. We'll be right back. Yesterday, federal agents executed search warrants at two properties in Los Angeles and Miami belonging to rap mogul Sean Diddy Combs. A source familiar with the matter told NBC News that Combs is the subject of a federal investigation following a wave of lawsuits that have been filed against him. Those lawsuits, including from his former girlfriend, Cassie Ventura, alleged physical and sexual abuse, which Combs has denied. The source also confirmed that three women and a man have been interviewed by federal officials in Manhattan in relation to allegations of sex trafficking, sexual assault, and the solicitation and distribution of illegal narcotics and firearms. Late today, Combs' lawyer issued the following statement. Quote, yesterday, there was a gross overuse of military-level force as search warrants were executed at Mr. Combs' residences. There was no excuse for the excessive show of force and hostility exhibited by authorities or the way his children and employees were treated. Mr. Combs was never detained, but spoke to and cooperated with authorities. Despite media speculation, neither Mr. Combs nor any of his family members have been arrested, nor has their ability to travel been restricted in any way. This unprecedented ambush, paired with an advanced coordinated media presence, leads to a premature rush to judgment of Mr. Combs and is nothing more than a witch hunt based on meritless accusations made in civil lawsuits. There's been no finding of criminal or civil liability with any of these allegations. Mr. Combs is innocent and will continue to fight every single day to clear his name. Unquote. Joining me now, Ms. Torrey, host of Masters of the Game. The new season premieres Friday on The Griot. What is going on? Because we did also see Diddy's sons arrested. They were detained. They weren't arrested. They were just detained. Yeah. But what is going on?
Well, it seems that there are several people who are saying things about Combs to the government, and they are trying to figure out what's going on. I found it interesting that they had enough to get a search warrant, right, for multiple places, but not enough yet to arrest him. So we're in the investigation phase, and clearly they don't care if we let him know what's going on.
Yeah.
But it seems part of his whole life, his whole journey has been this sort of scorched earth campaign where you see him continuing to succeed or do big things and leave people in his wake hurt. We go back to CCNY, which he, a party that he overpromoted that people yes. ended up getting killed. You think about the many artists who either left, you know, in complaint or went to the church or, you know, died nice. After, you okay. know, I mean, there was a lot of disheartened artists who left him
yeah.
that he raised up.
Shine.
On and on. And now this large growing number of people who are alleging crazy stuff
yes.
about him.
Yeah.
And these are things that people in the industry have been hearing about.
It's
over
giving
time.
R. Kelly, Torrey. It's giving, it's disturbing.
You know, I was personally disturbed many years ago. Okay. I know this man well enough to call him and say, hey, I need a favor.
Yeah.
And this might have been 10, 12 years ago that I called him and say, hey, I have a family member who I want you to hire them as an intern.
Yeah.
And I have never talked about this publicly. And he said, yes. And they were flying around, one of the interns, Atlanta, Miami, whatever, on the jet, in the house, whatever. And then the internship stopped abruptly, like 3 or 4 months into it.
Yeah.
And I spoke to my family member, like, well, what happened? And they wouldn't say.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why did it end? And he wouldn't yeah. say. And years later, they finally came out, and this is a male,
yeah.
and said that Puff had said, come home, stay the night with me, or the internship is over. And they said, absolutely not. He said, absolutely not. And the internship ended. But from there, I was like, oh, like this is how it goes. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So to hear that things went even further with potentially, allegedly many other people.
Yeah.
We feel like we've seen this coming.
Well, there was the situation with obviously Russell Simmons, who does not live in the United States any further. Mm-hmm. You've had these situations, obviously, with R. Kelly. This feels like it is going down that kind of a track because you have multiple accusers with nothing proved. He's not been adjudicated a, you know, whatever, but it's just talking.
Videos.
And he paid Cassie a lot of money.
A lot of money. And, you know, the people are coming with videos, though. I mean, like evidence, not just hearsay. So, I mean, this is a very, very frightening situation. There was a period in the record business when a lot of wildness was going on
yeah.
of this sort. And sure. here's another shoe dropping.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think, talk about where he stands, because what he's saying sounds very Trumpy.
Yeah.
He's talking about a witch hunt.
Yeah.
I had somebody text me earlier today. I think I texted you today and forwarded it to you that somebody is saying watch for him to try to weaponize sort of a Trump sort of narrative, or watch the Trump people try to weaponize what's happening in favor of Trump to say, look, there's this persecuted black man like me who's like me, and try to weaponize it.
I mean,
it feels very Trumpish.
I hate to say that anyone is like Trump, but there is something in the long-term rise of Puff, in that he seemed to create his own reality to
yeah.
demand that everyone around him follow what he wanted.
Yeah.
And people did. He had a ton of money behind him to start Bad Boy at a very young age.
Yeah.
And would just treat me. I mean, he's called me up and screamed at me on more than one occasion, and lots
yeah.
of people would say that. So their ego was gigantic. The ability
yeah.
to create the reality that he wanted
yeah.
seemed to be there.
But also to create a reality that was dangerous. I mean, I think for a lot of hip hop fans, the failure to protect Notorious B.I.G., the sort of egging on of an East Coast, West Coast rivalry between friends that were people who knew and respected each other and didn't have to be beefing, and to sort of let that violence come. You know, I think for a lot of us, and that, and also oversampling and making hip hop into a sample machine. Don't get me started.
Now you're doing that.
Now I'm doing that. But I'm only doing that because you're my friend and you'll defend me. No, don't get me started, Aunt Saray. How does this go? Is he in the United States? Do we know where he is?
I don't know. I can't even call it. I don't know.
Well, you have to come back when you get more information. Torrey, thank you. Up next, we have got to talk about the irony of Trump literally selling copies of the Bible to fund his legal troubles and the payoff of a porn star as that case heads to trial. We'll be right back. Remember this moment from 2020? It was one of the most shameful of the Trump presidency, and that's saying a lot. A group of nonviolent demonstrators, including clergy, who were gathered outside the White House to protest the brutal police killing of George Floyd, were tear gassed just so Donald Trump could walk across the street and hold a Bible he'd never touched before in front of a church he'd never been to before for a photo op. Today, Trump is once again using the Bible as a prop, but this time as part of his never-ending grift. In honor of Holy Week, with Easter just days away, Trump is now peddling God Bless the USA Bibles. Yes, you heard that right. The man who's about to face criminal trial for allegedly paying off a porn star to keep quiet about their affair while his third wife was at home with his newborn fifth child is selling Bibles. Billing itself as the only Bible endorsed by President Trump, these Bibles include the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, the Pledge of Allegiance, along with the handwritten chorus of Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA, all for the low, low price of $59.99. No word on if it also comes with a free pair of those gold sneakers that you can worship like a ball. Golden calf, golden shoes, whatever. And that is tonight's readout.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.